myself, I think God bless me that I'm survived today. When the shrapnel through my arm, some friend of mine died by shrapnel. My arm a lot of bleeding.
That's the voice of Kum Mem, who sometimes likes to be called Tom. He's a young man who works at the Siem Reap War Museum in Cambodia. I met him recently on a trip this past October. He's a landmine survivor, a war guide, and has a great sense of humor. He's one of my guests on today's show, where we're going to be talking about landmines, amputees, and issues faced by people living in the Global South. My name is David Peck, and welcome to CJSF Radio. I've asked Noel Hutchinson to join us today for the show to tell us a little bit about his experience. He's the Executive Director for Asian Outreach International Canada. He spent a great deal of time in Southeast Asia and has a deep love and passion for the country of Cambodia. Noel?
When I first flew into Cambodia, mid-90s, I was actually quite unprepared for what I saw, for what I felt. It was shocking, to say the least. And I think the thing that was most compelling for me, it wasn't that I didn't understand poverty. We worked in very impoverished villages and communities in northern Thailand among the ethnic minorities and the hill tribes and things like that. But there was just something different about what I experienced in my first trip to Cambodia. And I think in many ways it prepared me for all of our involvement ever since that point.
And yet, now looking back, you can say I've been working in the country for how many years?
Oh, it's got to be approaching 20 years now. And really, it was what I experienced in that first 2 weeks in the country that were the seed and my motivation and this passion and heart for Cambodia that just grew out of what I saw there. There was this beauty about the people. There was this resilience there in the midst of all this devastation. I think what captivated me was just something simple. Like if you wanted to take somebody's picture, they would just burst into these radiant smiles, almost like you care enough to notice me, to look at me. And I left the country really not wanting to go back in some senses. But then it wasn't long before it was like, man, I got to go back. And it was out of this that this huge passion and love for Cambodia just began to develop in my life.
After about a 20-minute tuk-tuk ride from the main center of Siem Reap, we landed at the War Museum, and I was actually there with a friend of mine, Sean Dell. We're currently filming a documentary movie about another war guide there in his life and how he's dealt with his past and so on and how he's building for a future. And it was then that we met Kum, or Tom, and I was immediately impressed by Tom's ability to connect. He was just such a deeply relational guy. He spoke great English. He had this beautiful smile and this great sense of humor. And it was there that we decided we need to interview this guy for a variety of reasons. Tom.
Oh, I lost my arm when I was 14 years old. That is a bad luck for me in my life. That we walked together with the friend in the field near the Thailand border, and we looking for scrap metal. And some friend, they found a mine. They don't know. This thing is like a toy. They play them with the friend and explode. Some friend around close by, they died by shrapnel because many bleeding. They design landmine from, I know they not killed, just wound injured. They say one injured, fire sick army here to take care. But my friend, bad luck, they died by bleeding far away from the hospital. And bad luck for me, my arm, left arm, a lot of bleeding. If happened today, I think my arm is fine. They can operation, take a shrapnel, save my arm. That time, some friend, they tried to save my life. They become a doctor. They took a small, tiny wire, metal wire, cutting my arm. No injection, no painkiller. And I remember they gave me smoking. Do you know ganja? Ganja like painkiller, they told me. They give to me to smoke, but I cough a lot. I give back to my friend, and my friend, they give back to me. They say, more smoke because gancha like painkiller. And then make me very thirsty. I need to drink. I talk to them. Please give me water, please. They say, cannot get a drink. Yeah, get a drink, more bleeding. And my heart jammed because that time I had run fast. And I see some friend, they walking, they bring coconut fruit. In my mind, I think they let me drink the coconut juice. After they walking, come to me, I pass out. When I open my eye again, my older friend, he told me 3-9 already that I can't open my eye. When I see my arm gone, I'm always feel sad, little cry. One of my older friend, he say, don't cry, don't worry anything. He tried to tell me, one day when I grow up, he say my arm will grow.
Karen Valley, the director of the War Amps Amputee Center in Ottawa, Canada, brings her helpful perspective as an amputee and a woman who has worked with the organization for over 20 years.
It's a challenge sometimes to define what disabled means because you're trying to reconcile what your internal definition of versus where you are in society and what society's expectation is or their interpretation of the world. And what your interaction is with the world at that particular moment in time. In my own personal experience, I've had great moments where I have felt anything but disabled, and then other moments where not having a second hand has truly been an insurmountable challenge. And so in that moment, if I was standing next to a peer, they with two hands would be able to achieve that, and I with one could not. So in that moment, the only thing that defined the difference that I could see would be the lack of the second hand. And yet there are other things that I could do much better than a peer, regardless of the number of hands I have or that they have. So I think sometimes we attach labels to things because it's an easy category to put us in, but I don't think living with a disability is as black and white as that.
You know, here's a statistic in speaking about those with physical disabilities, that they figure there are still between 150 and 200 unexploded ordinances that go off every quarter in this country. So just coming alongside communities that are dealing with even the repercussions and the fallout from unexploded ordinances is huge.
But blend my victim like me or my friend, we had to get a job. One thing had to get a friend. Some Cambodian, they very look down the landmine victim. They hate the soldier. They say army is the killer. So they don't care which army good or bad, but they say army is the killer. Some people hate the army. People look down, they don't want to talk, they want to make friend with. And one more thing, had to get to school. Like we try to study too, but we have no government supporters to the school and had to get a job. Like many places before I work here, I tried to get a job, guest house, hotel, a lot of places, they say, don't have both arms, cannot work. But I say, I can. But they say, no, cannot work. One time, real story, I tried to be a receptionist at one guest house. I say, I can. You know, I write CV to them. I got interview because I didn't tell them I'm missing arm. I got interview. I'm happy to go. They see me missing arm. They say, oh, sorry, I didn't say I lost arm. So they say I cannot be a receptionist. I change my mind. I say I can be a cleaner. I'm strong. But they say, no, one arm hurt. So they didn't give me a job. And I try to be speaking English tour guide. That I told you it's can. Because the rural government missing arm cannot be a tour guide. But I got hard brain. I don't want to be back on the street. We need to work.
The number of factors in a place like Cambodia that can come into play, often in culture that has those types of experiences with disability, those living with disabilities hide their disabilities, or they hide themselves. And so society isn't exposed to it, doesn't see it, doesn't have experience with it, doesn't see the positives, the benefits of interacting with or knowing someone with a disability. We know in Canadian culture that if you have a worker with a disability, they are often more loyal than another worker might be, because it's been a challenge to get a job, and so that job is valued in a way it can't be for anyone else. It's going to be too hard to get another job somewhere else because of perceived bias or real bias that might be out there. So attendance is better, the work quality is better, the loyalty is stronger. And so when you don't see that in your everyday experiences, there's a lot more myths or mysticism built up behind it, and it's rarely do we boldly and with passion accept those things we don't know. Mm. We often, we're scared of things we don't know or understand. New experiences aren't always embraced with zest.
Paul Hannon, the Executive Director of Minds Action Canada, joins us to talk to us about how he thinks we are winning the war on landmine clearance and unexploded ordnance in the Global South.
Do a triage in terms of what the clearance needs are, and then start making sure you have enough donors and enough money to do that properly, and you train local people. You don't bring in a ton of expats. You don't bring in a ton of Canadians to do this, even if there may be Canadian military people who know how to do it. You bring in a trainer or two, maybe a supervisor or two, and then you train the local people, who most of whom can't work anyways because the land is contaminated. So you're giving them employment. They have a motivation to clear the land because they want to live on it. And you're getting the community to rebuild itself. You're helping the community rebuild itself and clear itself. So that's, I think, a second main task you take. And the third task is that you have to help people understand, particularly the leadership and at the national and the local level, that people who have been victims of the weapon, landmine survivors, have rights, and it's not their fault.
I experienced the same thing as a teenager. I was able to keep the job, but it is that judgment, that visual judgment that is made, and having to overcome that judgment and prove the other person wrong that, yes, you can do it, and you end up sort of doing a superhuman effort to over-impress because you feel that you're starting from a deficit position.
The war ended. A lot of people live with the poverty, that a lot of problems. So I'm happy work here with a lot of my friend, the landmine victim, to tell tourists about how Cambodian people that suffering in the war. I'm happy work here. I want to tell the youth generation of Cambodian, one day they grow up, don't go to the war, and tell all the tourists around the world that visit this museum should not make a war. I'm very glad to tell all the tourists here about all those happened, that they are very lucky because their country no war, no landmine, but they come to Cambodia, that Cambodia a lot of landmine. But now Cambodia is peaceful, no problem. Tourists can visit Cambodia, and Cambodia people open mind, open heart to tell what happened through Cambodia war.
So we have a whole pile of people to thank for this show. Richard Essler, who is the manager at the Siem Reap War Museum in Siem Reap, Cambodia. Please get out to see Richard and his guides and the museum if you get to that part of Cambodia in the near future. And to Tom Arkoum, our very special guest, who shared his part of his story with us. And of course, our panel of experts, Paul Hannon from Minds Action Canada, Noel Hutchinson from Asian Outreach International Canada, and Karen Valley, the director of War Amps National Amputee Center in Ottawa. And of course, our sound guy and all around good guy show-like producer, Josh Nethledge from Mixed Media Sound. This show wouldn't have been possible without the support and assistance of CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia, and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Thanks for joining us. My name is David Peck.